Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the app store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller podcast, live and direct, central London, or as central as you need to be, could be, wanna be, should be. You don't want to be anywhere else. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. As you can probably tell, judging by my sonic vocals, we're going across Atlantic to San Francisco, West Coast area, for one of the heroes in turntablism and scratch DJ, Invisible Scratch Biggles, D Styles inside the place. How are you, legend?
Hey, what's up? What's up? How you doing, Killer?
I'm good, family. How are you?
I'm good. Actually, I'm in Las Vegas now, but I grew up in San Francisco. The Bay Area is like where I grew up. But yeah, I currently reside in Las Vegas right now.
Talk to me about that. What's the deal with Vegas?
You know, it's one of the last places where you can actually afford to buy a house, you know what I mean? Because the West Coast is so damn expensive. California in general is so damn expensive, you know. San Francisco, Los Angeles, it's just crazy. You basically need $1 million to buy a house, you know.
Yeah, so, I feel that. That sounds like the rest of the world right now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Before we carry on, can you hear me when I whisper?
Yep.
That's perfect. Then I'm using this microphone. Always like to check. Yeah, it's very much like that in London. There's a lot of things going on in the world right now that suggest that us creative people, or at least people within the industry that we orbit around, we have to find our natural habitats elsewhere. We make the place look cool, and then we get chucked out the place that we made cool.
Jesus, right? Oh man.
Talk to me about San Francisco anyway, because you know, you spent a hell of a lot of time there, and at a time where New York was very much dominant. It was very much the place, you know, young D Styles to have garnered a mass of such incredible skills and abilities. That must have been a not so much of a homegrown thing, more of a study.
So I grew up about 40 minutes outside of San Francisco in a small city called San Jose. And now San Jose is kind of known as Silicon Valley. It's like where all the tech companies are based at. Right. So, you know, growing up there, you know, like I had to take the train or, you know, drive out to San Francisco just to kind of be around the city and the culture. And most of the events were in San Francisco, you know, if you wanted to go watch, you know, Big Daddy Kane, or if someone came into town, NWA, you know, they were usually performing in San Francisco. So that's where the hub of the culture was. And so me and my friends would go out there and just, you know, go out to the shows, and I'd try to absorb everything. But I was lucky to be around that and be around hip hop in the 80s, you know what I mean? You know, just studying, you know, the B-boys, studying the DJs, all the graffiti, all that stuff. And back then, you know, this is like 84, 85. I tried it all. I tried to rap. I tried to break. I was doing graffiti. And for some reason, just DJing stuck with me. You know what I mean? Scratching in general felt natural. And I felt like I could express myself best through that. And so I just stuck with it. You know what I mean? And I was just grateful and fortunate to be around, you know, the older guys who pretty much paved the way and showed me the way, you know what I mean?
Who were the inspiration? Who were the people that paved the way and showed you the way at the time?
So in my hometown in San Jose, there was one guy, Peanut Butter Wolf. And he's a few years older than me. I went to school, with his sister. And so just kind of being around them, his family, and just seeing kind of what he was doing. He was DJing, he was working back then with Charisma and other MCs. and just scratching, you know what I mean? So whenever I got a chance to see him DJ out live, I would definitely go. And I was underage back then, so I'd have to sneak into the events. He was one definitely that inspired me. King Tech from the
nice.
Sway and Tech Wake Up Show. He's another one, another legend. And he's from also the South Bay where I grew up. And then, of course, Qbert, Mixmaster, Mike Apollo, those guys.
Just well, crazy lineage. I say that word quite a lot, but like this, the only way to describe it is like to have these people who weren't so widely known, but mm-hmm. in the paddock with, that must have been one hell of a, you sometimes you can just, you naturally collect creative energy without even knowing how rare it is. And when you're with these kind of people that are like orbiting around the same area as you, it must have been a given. Like, yeah, of course, Peanut Butter Wolf. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, he was definitely the hometown hero. And, you know, coming from where we grew up, just looking up to him and seeing him take these steps and, you know, and he created Stone's Throw and then he moved to LA and, you know, and so it was very inspiring to see that, to see someone from our own hometown make it and be successful, you know, very
inspiring. How much of that is creative energy and how much of that is timing? Because if I remember that era and discovering you guys, it was really like a very special moment.
Yeah, I'd probably say it's 50-50 because at that time, you know, that was before the explosion of the internet, and you really had to go out and dig and find stuff. And so, you know, back then, timing was everything. You know what I mean? It was just a great time to be active and to be putting out music back then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a golden era. And talk to me about where, because obviously, as mentioned, although there were a lot of influences around you, the turntablism, or what it came to become, was still very fresh, wasn't it?
Definitely was. I would say, you know, we were getting a lot of our influence from watching old DMC videotapes back then. And it was almost like, you know, it was hard to find these videotapes because, you know, they weren't selling them at your local store. Right. Mm-hmm. You had to get a copy of a copy of a copy from someone. And it's just funny because back then the guy who used to sell these videotapes was Qbert. So he was the plug for trying to get these
amazing
these DMC battles, right? You know, you would and back then that was like the era of the pager or the beeper. So you would page Q, and you'd like specify like a time to come by his place, meet him, give him $5. He would give you the tape. You'd go home and study these videotapes. So he was the plug. It was just crazy, man, because that's how we learned. You know what I mean? We learned from watching videotapes, from winding it 100 times, trying to copy what these guys were doing. These DMC battles, these were the Olympics, you know what I mean? Yeah. Every country had somebody. And so it was just interesting and dope to see how someone from Greece or Japan, you know, or the Netherlands, they would use their own flavor and their own style from where they came from and put it into their DJing style or their cutting or their beat juggling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it that sounds just so given that Q was the hookup. He was the plug. But that just seems...
Yeah.
Like, how did that even come about? Like, how did you know that he was the guy to go and see?
I mean, because, you know, as far as the whole DJ battle scene, you know, that's a very small scene. It's very niche. If you go to a couple battles, you kind of meet everyone, all the key players, and you know, in the scene, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area. So, you know, like once you kind of meet someone, you know, and that just kind of, you just kind of connect the dots, and you know, everyone will just say, "Hey, where do you get that that 193, you know, DMC battle?" You know, just tell you, "Oh, you got to get it from Q. Just connect with Q, and he'll get you, you know, the drugs." Basically, that's what it was.
Drugs it is, man. Like, the thing is with hip hop disciplines, and this is something that has become ever more infectious as I've grown up further. As I've got older, the tools, it's almost like I'm growing up to be a DJ or a beatboxer or an artist, and I want to be able to create sustainability. But once you hit that peak, you realize actually that you're just kind of addicted to the hip hop tools, and you just can't help but, "I don't even care about the money, because I just got to get this right."
Yeah.
What is that thing?
You know, I don't know. Part of it, I like to compare it to the rush and the high you get from graffiti, from bombing. I don't know if you've, you know, just going out on the highway or the freeway and just bombing. Uh-huh. And getting that crazy rush, knowing that you could get, you know, arrested, busted, killed, whatever.
Yeah.
And then seeing your piece the next day, you know what I mean? It just, there's something great about it. And I think that's the same for every element of hip hop. You know, if it's DJing, if you're putting out mixtapes back in the day or records, you know, you're just kind of cementing your sort of your stamp, your tag, or your legacy that way. You know what I mean? It's like a high that you always chase. You know what I mean?
It is like a high that you always chase. I guess it's a combination of ego meets.
Yes.
Yeah. Meets nothing. It's just you. It's just ego.
It's just pure ego, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just mad, mad drive. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at these disciplines as a whole, and we're talking, I guess we're talking more in retrospect. If you've got a creative energy and a talent, or at least you think you can contribute at a point in a culture, the first thing you've got to think of is you better come good, because there's already a stable full of people that are doing a thing. I think with turntablism or scratch DJing, there was this ceiling that had been set respectfully. Within the early 90s, a lot of heroes were forged in that time. But right. There was just something about the Bay Area DJs that when they got on board with it, it became just like a whole nother thing.
I think a lot of that, you know, I think just being from the West Coast, we were influenced by New York, of course. And we also had our own Bay Area roots, you know what I mean, with San Francisco and Oakland, the music scene there. And then we were influenced by, like, Miami, like, just the whole Miami-based thing. Mm-hmm. So we embraced it all. And I felt like we just kind of took it and made it our own little thing. You know what I mean? We didn't care. Because, you know, back then I felt like New York, they didn't really mess with upper tempos, with like faster, like 115, 120, 130 BPM type beats. Mm-hmm. And Miami was all about that. And all the DJs were cutting over fast stuff. And so I feel like we embraced it. We embraced New York. And we took what we liked about that. We took what we liked about Miami, and we combined it and kind of made it our own style. And I mean, this goes back to, like, you know, Mixmaster Mike and Qbert and DJ Apollo. Like, in my opinion, they laid the blueprint for, like, turntable music and just the whole turntable band orchestra style. You know what I mean? That was, in my opinion, that was the blueprint. What they were doing, and what they were doing, I know a lot of people don't even know. They were doing, it was FM2O, Fierce Minds to Observe. That was their rap group. It was them on the turntables, and they had two or three MCs, and they were like Public Enemy, but with live, you know, scratching and DJing behind them. You know what I mean?
Wow, that was way ahead of its time, wasn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah, definitely.
Probably out there. Your contribution to turntablism, scratch DJing, the expressiveness in which you cut, the expressiveness in which you, like, it just feels to me that turntables was just the thing, but you could probably have lent your creative hand to anything. And it, I don't know, you know, there's some people that you just hear and you're just like, wow, you're singing through that thing. You're moving through that thing. You're expressing through that thing. That, and I find that really interesting, like how you even got to that point with such tenacity and confidence to express yourself in that way.
Man, yeah. I think with any like instrument or any art, you have to say something. And especially in hip hop, you know, we have that golden rule of no biting, you know, number one. And so for the longest time, like, I was such a bedroom DJ and a bedroom scratcher that I didn't want to go on stage and go in front of the public eye until I felt like I was original enough and I had something to contribute. Right. And so I started battling around 88, 89. And when I saw myself on video, I realized I'm not original and I was just a biter and I sound like my influences. I can hear Q-Bert, I could hear Mixmaster Mike in my style. And so I got disgusted with myself and I figured I need to go back to the drawing board. And, you know, I stayed away from the scene from, 93, 94 is my last battle. I stayed away from the scene until about 97. And that's when I kind of felt like I had something to offer, you know what I mean? And I tried to find myself, you know, and I finally figured out, all right, I can't chase Q-Bert. I'm not as fast and technical as him. And I can't do Mix Match of Mike because no one else can fucking sound like that guy. So I need to be myself. And, you know, I took some chances, some risks, and I figured, all right, I'm going to go the opposite route. If everyone's going to be fast and crazy and like hyper speed, I'm going to go slow and I'm going to be more funky and I'm going to try to say something and be more melodic. And so I took the risk. And you know, like, I think it's still an ongoing thing because I'm still trying to find my voice. It never ends, you know what I mean? But I'm just lucky that you know, I'm able to express myself through scratching.
That's some world champion business talk right there, ladies and gentlemen, without question. Like, in this day and age with generations that have passed, I think one of the last thing people consider is patience. And you talk about taking risks, like when you're how old were you in 94? I mean, actually, let's not go there. But in 1994 to 1997, 98, that's a wide berth of I'm studying. That, I don't know if it's just risk. I think for a lot of people, anxiety in those early stages of redeveloping, right?
Yeah, for sure. It was a great time too, because that's when a lot of these legends today started coming out and battling. Babu, Melody, Craze, A-Track. And so, you know, I was around these guys, but I was always kind of in the back, just quietly studying and trying to figure out what the hell am I going to do? You know what I mean? And I loved what they were doing, but I can't, you know, I already knew I'm not going to be them. I can't do what they do. So it was a good time to be around that and to absorb it, you know what I mean? And marinate and just kind of quietly plot, like, what the hell, what my next steps were, you know?
Yeah. And I think, again, going back to the right time, right place, right time thing, to be a study of that time and see these celebrities, DJ celebrities emerge, it almost gave you the opportunity to find your space within the front row of these new statuses.
Yes, totally. Yeah. And you know, and I was lucky enough to be around Q-Bert when he was recording Wave Twisters. And to kind of see him work and see like his workflow and his creative process, I was able to kind of learn from that, you know, and so that inspired me to make my own album. And then I realized battling isn't for me. I'm not gonna, that's not where I shine. You know what I mean? And I always felt like I needed more than, you know, 3 minutes or 5 minutes to kind of express myself. So I figured, all right, let me take it to the studio and just producing and recording and making music. And until today, I feel like that's kind of where I shine. I'm more of a studio rat than I am someone who's on stage and shines, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. You've got to find your position, but you really spearheaded that. What? Because, and also I might just add as well, is if you're not watching and you're listening, behind these styles at the moment is, you know, your archetype collection on show. I mean, we're in the hub of the studio right here. And you also teach as well. This is a more current thing that you're up to at the moment, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. So, we opened a DJ school, me and the Beat Junkies. We opened a DJ school in Los Angeles, California. And we, you know, we teach everything from the foundation of DJing to trick mixing, to scratching, to beat juggling. And so we have an actual school in LA, and then we have an online school as well.
I'm very much aware of this school. Big up Beat Junkies.
Oh, man. Thank you, man. Thank
Come
you.
On, man. When you're teaching, how far into the recesses of your catalog do you go? Because it must be quite profound that being one of the contributors, the main contributors internationally, of West Coast and outwards, and not mention any of the, you know, the Scratch Pickles mixtapes or the Beat Junkies XYZ. I mean, the battles, the production, the albums. You know, it must be quite hard to like, not to. It must be hard to defer from the fact that you know. Your D styles.
I mean, you know, like, I think a lot of our students are drawn to come to our school. You know what I mean? Just for that, for the history part of it. But we actually try to, you know, we use these lessons that we've learned along the way, you know, and we try to teach these lessons to them as well. Just things that we've learned, the ups and downs of our career. And, you know, we try to let them know, hopefully, that they don't make these same mistakes that we did. You know what I mean? But it is a different day and era now with social media, and you know, and it's interesting because a lot of these students, they ask us, how do you navigate, you know, through social media? How do you market yourself? How do you promote this? Mm-hmm. How do you put out music? And so, you know, like, we're trying to keep up with technology and this day and era as well, man. It's pretty crazy, just, you know, the speed of how everything is traveling right now.
Yeah, and I think there's a question for each. As you were talking, I was thinking, well, actually, that's a good point. That's a good question. Okay, let me start from a teaching point of view. Like, you're from a more techers to the funky side of D styles. Talk to me about the teachings of this. And I don't want you to give away too much of your special sources, but like, you know, what is the secret behind keeping it that funky and that expressive? What's the secret? If a student was to ask you, what is it?
The secret.
I am a conduit to DJ Prime Cuts right now. I can feel him on my shoulder.
Oh shit!
That's Shout your out to guy, Prime man. Cuts, man. Big up Prime Cuts.
Yeah. I love Prime Cuts, man.
Yeah, man. He loves you.
Man, I mean, secrets, you know, it's I really feel like you have to have some type of strong foundation of cuts, you know what I mean? And I understand why a lot of the jazz players studied blues, you know, because I think that was their foundation. And then they took it to the next level with jazz. And I feel like with cutting or scratching, you know, you have to know where everything came from. And so you have to study the legends that came before you. So for me, it's Joe Cooley and it's Jazzy Jeff, DJ Aladdin and Cash Money. And I feel like they are blues, are BB King, Muddy Waters. And to me, they are the epitome of funk. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking what I learned from them, their style, and I'm not trying to copy it, but I'm trying to turn it into my own version of it. You know what I mean? And I'm trying to sort of channel their energy and put it into my style. But it's such a thin line, because you want to be simple enough, but you don't want to be too simple. You know what I mean? And so you have to kind of tread lightly right there. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there is there is no formula and there is no secret sauce, man. It's just constant trial and error and trusting your ear, you know what I mean? On what sounds good to you, you know what I mean?
Man. And especially with the way technology is right now, it's like you can't bypass that blueprint, that DNA that has, like you say, the muddy waters effect, where the BB Kings, like they are our equivalents right now, the Jazzy Jeffs and the
yeah, definitely.
You can't escape that. That's like your foundations.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%.
But do you feel like with the awakening of technology and the overflow of DJs and talent and focus, do you feel like, you mean, you've got to put 3 to 4 times more attention on individuality within the scratches or the cuts or the decisions you make, right? Because everything is hyper observed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's real tricky these days, you know what I mean? Cause there's so much out there. There's so much information, you know what I mean? There's so many people are constantly feeding you videos and this and that. And it's so easily to get drawn into something and be influenced, you know what I mean? By something. I just think at the end of the day, though, you know, it really comes down to just trusting your ears and just kind of knowing, yeah, man, this feels right. And this sounds right. And this is me. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be, you know, craze, you know, or I'm not trying to be this. It's okay to have that influence and take that influence. But, you know, I think Carlos Santana said it best. He said, it's like you have influences, but at a certain point, it's like a snake and you need to shed that skin and peel it off. You know what I mean? So I like that right there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Elton John, I always think of the one Elton John said was like, you can have as many different influences and ideas and you just got to put them in a box. And then one day you might think of an idea again and go back to that box and just go, yeah, that's where I got it from. I won't do that. Or I will do that. It's about having it in your armory though.
Right. Well, yeah, totally, totally. And it's crazy because, you know, with the whole hip hop thing and no biting, I think now that I'm older, you know, I learned from copying, from imitating back then, you know what I mean? And now I realize it was okay to borrow that, but I'm not going to go out and publicly do, you know, Rob Swift style or someone's routine, you know, to the T. Like, but yeah. I learned the blueprint, I learned the technical part of it by copying his routine, you know what I mean? But I'm going to take that and I'm going to create and make my own, you know what I mean?
That's everyone the hardest has
their own fingerprint. Yeah, oh, that's the hardest. Yeah, for sure.
That's the hardest. It's like when you're a graph writer, you get given sketches by people and you get really comfortable with those sketches and how do you morph into something else? And it's the same with Razel with beatboxing. Like again, like beatboxing took a 4-wheel drive the same time as turntablism did. And I would argue that maybe Supernatural kind of came through with the MCing and the battle rapping that kind of spawned an attention to battle rap and the likes of Eminem of his time.
Right.
It's so hard not to be influenced by people when they're doing so well.
Right, for sure. I know, right?
It's almost like the codes you've been given that are just like suddenly there and you're like, well, I can do this, but how do I change that and make it something else. It's tough, isn't it?
Right. It is very tough. Yeah. No, that's perfectly what you, that's perfect what you said. It's like with the graph, like I know a lot of like writers will share alphabets, you know what I mean? And block letters and this and that. And it's easy to copy it. You know what I mean? But then how do you make it your own? And that's the whole, that is the challenge right there.
Yeah. It's the challenge because everyone says, oh yeah, but that's you. But it's like, well, yeah, but I, you know, slash sounds like slash. I would imagine he has to by now know what slash sounds like. You know what I mean?
Right.
But how do you know? How do you know?
I know. Right. You know what? I want to go back and shout out Prime Cuts. Just because I feel like when the Scratch Perverts came into the scene, it was a huge disrupt. And by that, I mean, there wasn't any characters quite like Prime Cuts and Tony Vegas at the time. And I felt like, if you want to compare it to wrestling, I felt like those guys were like the bad guys who came in and started talking trash. And they were hyping up their battles. Like, because before that, there wasn't a lot of hype like that. And I remember when like Tony Vegas first came to San Francisco and he was scheduled to battle Babu in the Scratch category. Mm-hmm. And there was so much hype around it because he was online talking, saying he was gonna fuck up Babu and he was gonna take Scratching and take it back to the UK. And we're like, what the fuck? Who's this guy? He has the balls to say this, you know? but now I look back and it's like he was so ahead of his time. He was just hyping up, the fight or the battle. It's almost like a UFC fighter, a boxer, you know, being able to hype up their battle and he can back it up, of course, too, you know. But I just remember like when the Scratch Perverts came into the scene, it was like something I had never seen before. Like mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, it was crazy, man. Anyways, yeah, shout out to my guy Prime Cut.
Yeah, they took no prisoners. In fact, they didn't even take their own crew's prisoners. Like I know Mr. Thing and First Rate were just complete. They were like the rest of the DJ scene. They were just like kind of, no, we're still here learning, but like our guys here just like fucking having it with everybody.
Yeah. They would come out smashing people with chairs, man. That's how crazy I remember the Perverts.
And that's a really good description as of its time. I think there's only one or two times in a cycle of a culture where you really get those WWF moments where it's like you really have personalities.
Right. I think we need more of that in this day. You know what I mean? I think it just seems like, you know, everyone's very... very, very PC and cordial, but it's nice to have these guys who have zero filter and just say whatever they want. You know what I mean? Mm.
Did it get to the point where, because you were there throughout this whole time and everything it did for me anyway, you know, I think it's once Craze had won so many DMCs world finals and there was every kind of scratch team battle you could possibly have within the restrictions of the tech or the rules of tech. Mm-hmm. It just felt like it had got bloated and there was this, it was such a successful scene and commercialized, like from a UK point of view, you know, Tony and Joel were on the front cover of like men's magazines, you know, it got to this point where you could, you know, scratch DJing was on TV commercials. Did you ever feel like, oh man, this is not entirely what I bought into?
Right. I mean, you know, like I really congratulate, you know, that actually happened. You know, like Rob Swift and Shortcut, they were on a Gap commercial. You know what I mean? And yeah. I never thought I'd ever see that. You know, but I guess, you know, that's just kind of the direction things head in. But it doesn't really distract me from my goals and my focus, you know what I mean? And that's not my goal, like to be in a commercial or nothing. I'm not mad at that, you know what I mean? And I totally understand it. But you know, like as long as you're still focused on what you were put on earth to do, you know what I mean? And look at Shortcut and Rob, they're still at it. And they're still killing it, you know what I mean? So, I don't think it should distract anything.
No, that's right. I think there is an argument that, well, if these heroes that richly deserve it don't do it. Some other person may that don't quite nearly have the kudos and the technical ability.
Right.
So you got to go with it. You know what I mean? If an opportunity knocks, you've got to go and take it, haven't you?
Right.
For and sure. do you think that falls in line with some of the practice that you teach at the school? Because that was kind of coming on to my next question, is like, do they often ask like what the career path is like as a upcoming DJ? Because I would imagine in 2022, the relevance of DJing is fundamentally different compared to what it was in 2002.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, our students are very broad. For me, I primarily just teach advanced scratching. Like, I'm just focusing on that. Mm-hmm. So the bulk of my students are interested in either battling or making turntable music and trying to make that a career, as opposed to someone who, you know, like our other instructors, Rhett Maddock, or like Mr. Chalk, they're teaching more foundation DJing. And so the majority of the students are just learning mixing and how to make a career out of, you know, either DJing in clubs or bars or restaurants or whatever. So, you know what I mean? It's two different, it's apples and oranges. Mm. For my students, you know, it's awesome to be able to teach and show them and have people that are actually eager to listen to what the hell I have to say, you know what I mean? And teach. And I would have never have thought that I'd be teaching scratching, you know what I mean? To the world, man, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very telling of the time we're in, isn't it?
Right.
And social media, again, you alluded to earlier, it's the new thing. And when lockdown kicked in, everyone went straight to Twitch. The response from the public was amazing. People got quickly assimilated with the idea that this is the way we're going to be doing it. And even when things open up again, this is a new stable for where people can find out about new tunes. DJs weren't actually playing songs that they didn't want to play. They played things they wanted to play, and that,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's why I'm so shocked when I tune in on Twitch and I'm watching DJs and they're just playing the same club set that they would play any like, come on, man, like take a chance and play something different, you know what I mean? And you're 100% right. It's awesome to give DJs that creative freedom to play whatever they want, you know what I mean, and do whatever they want. So it's nice to see them, you know, take a risk like that, for sure.
Tell us something that people wouldn't know about these styles. I mean, I'm talking about like the recesses of your adventures to the elephant in the room that you very rarely discuss. Like, What is a D Styles that no one would know about?
Man.
Got him.
I think a lot of people don't know that I'm really into ping pong, table tennis. And I love playing ping pong, table tennis.
I love that. Yeah. That is such a strategy game as well.
It is. I was born in the Philippines, and in the Philippines, that's such a huge sport, you know. And then when we moved to the States, growing up, I was always around a ping pong table, you know, house parties, all my relatives would come over and we would just play. And my uncles, they were all super good. And so I was, as a young kid, I just always learned and played with people who are so good, you know what I mean? And so now in this day and age, it's rare to even find a ping pong table, and it's tough to even find people who can actually play and not just smash it, you know what I mean, but actually know how to play. Right.
I mean, the last thing you want to do is you're batting that ball somewhere where you can't get it. It's hard enough to grab it as it bounces around. It's so light, dude.
yeah, for sure.
That's not the one.
But, right. but just the art of knowing how to spin that, you know what I mean? And cut it, and the techniques of like, okay, if you're going to do an underspin, I have to hit it, do a top spin, or else it's going to counteract and the ball's not going to go the right direction, you know?
Very certain techniques. Interesting. Yeah. And it's the same sort of pattern. It's the same sort of, what's the word? You have to absorb yourself into getting every single outcome under your belt so that you're able to react to it in any situation. That is kind of like DJing, really, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. Hey, you know, I wanted to ask you, do you ever use those like loopers, like a loop station type of thing?
I did once, but I kind of stopped from a beatbox point of view because I just felt like it took the magic out of the performance. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like you know, pulling the rabbit out of the hat. You know, that's the beatbox thing. But then if you've got like four rabbits sitting on the table anyway.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Now, just because I know there's a whole like culture and community of just that, you know what I mean? And guys who just do like loop stuff and kind of make that their own art and stuff. I was just curious if you do that stuff too.
No, but it is, again, and I think this harks back to your production values in the studio. Mm-hmm. A lot of DJs, or at least up until the newer generation mixers, etc., were really reluctant at taking advantage of this thing. You weren't, because you had a studio mentality. You had a different set of you had a different creative palette.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just tried to use any advantage I had. You know what I mean? Just because I wasn't this like crazy battle monster. You know what I mean? And so, just so you know, and I knew that I wasn't going to pursue that. Like, I wasn't built for battling. Like, that takes a different person. You have to have super thick skin, and you have to be able to perform under pressure. And I'm not that guy. You know what I mean? And I realized that early. So I was like, all right, let me just focus on what I know that I'm good at. And it's more of studio stuff, making songs. And let me apply this scratch stuff that I know to what I've learned already. Cause I was making beats on the drum machines and the samplers as well. And so I kind of applied that, and I said, well, why do I need to program these drums? I can just scratch these drums. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Why do I need to sample this loop? I can just loop it myself on the turntables. And it, to me, it sounds better because it has that human quality, and it's not so quantized. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And at this point, I just want to big up Z Trip, because I think he follows a very similar ethic in DJing and production as well, doesn't he? He's not afraid to merge the two, and but yet still have the skills to shine.
Right. Yeah, Z Trip definitely pioneering that, man. Like a real has that punk rock mentality where he just doesn't care, and he'll try it. And if it sounds good, it sounds good. Shouldn't matter what genre or whatever the rules are. He's always going outside the box. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, production wise, in the studio, what setup are you working on at the moment?
Right now I'm using Ableton to record in, but I use, you know, primarily just one turntable, one mixer, and I have this little loop station thing that I use, and it's just to try out ideas on the fly. So, you know, just to kind of get an idea of, okay, these drums will work with this bass line or whatever. And then once I kind of know what I'm working with, then I'll take it to Ableton and record it clean, you know, in a cleaner format, and then be able to arrange it in inside Ableton that way.
Are you working with breaks? Are these really ready-made samples? Are you going through that stack of records behind you?
I use vinyl. Awesome. But if I only have one copy, then I'll have to digitize it, just because I don't want to get the record burned and mess it up.
Yeah.
So then I'll digitize it, and then I can mess with it in Serato, and it'll never get messed up. You know what I mean? But I still collect records, and I'm always digging for obscure stuff. You know what I mean?
What's the album that you could almost say definitively, or at least just so that the audience can be steered to something of a blueprint of yours, what would you say is the definitive that that, that exercises your versatility at a certain peak of your career that you, you could say, oh yeah, that I definitely had that.
I mean, for my own stuff, I'm sure it's Phantasmagoria, and you know, that was just during a time when there wasn't anything quite like it. Like Cuba did Wave Twisters.
That's right. Yeah.
And he did some outer space, aliens, you know, type stuff. And I wanted to do more darker, evil, sinister stuff. And I was very influenced by like Portishead and that trip hop era. Mm. And I wanted to do something like that with that sound, but just on the turntables, you know what I mean? And so, I would say, yeah, that album. And, you know, I'm still chasing it, man. It kind of goes back to that high, like where I want to recreate something like that, you know,
get that. Yeah. The old ego. Keep going. I'm with you, brother. I'm with you. You know what? When I think back to like that trip hop era, when I think of Wave Twister, all of the, everything that kind of came out of the, well, I just feel like every single album should have been from its place of the turntable, and actually your skills need to match the production value on the record.
Mm-hmm.
If you never always, some people, you can't fake the funk. Like you're saying, before you go and record something, you're putting in a loop station. You know what I mean? Like that's you trying right before you commit.
Right. Yeah. And I think another issue that I deal with is that when I'm making music, I'm also thinking of the live element where it's like, I don't want to build this song so much that I can't perform it live as well, because there's so much instrumentation going on. So I'm always trying to think and strip things down and say, all right, so if we were to ever perform this thing, I could do it with four people, you know, four other turntablists. Mm. One guy will have the drums, one guy's on bass line, one guy has, you know, the main sample, and then one person is the soloist or whatever. So I'm always trying to imagine, okay, I want to perform this piece live. I need to keep it in its most basic, minimal instrumentation, you know what I mean? Mm. Just the meat and potatoes of it.
People can get a little bit too excited about that alone, isn't it? If you shoot your load and get too techers or too clever, some things are just energy. And I think that's where your expression comes through the most, is like it just feels effortless, and that's the meat and veg.
Oh man, thank you. I think that's the goal, but I think there's people who, you know, like you just look at them and they can make it look easy. You know what I mean? I look at, you know, guys like DJ Babu, and the way he juggles, or yeah, he cuts, he makes it look easy. And, you know, the same thing with like Qbert. Mm. And so that's, I don't think we're thinking in the moment like that, but that is the goal. You know what I mean? It's to make it look easy.
Yeah. Thinking in the moment. Yeah. Totally, like
right.
So the stabilizer's off, and you're just doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's the beauty of scratch DJing as a whole, is that I guess it's like a good electric guitarist riffing. It's like, it's such a given nowadays that you hear a guitar doing a certain thing, but very rare, especially nowadays, do you see someone actually going ahead and executing it in front of you.
Yeah. Right. I mean, outside of beatboxing, where do you look for like influence and ideas from?
For me, turntablism still does that for me, but
okay.
Yeah, man. I think genres are important. And I know that's relatable from a DJ point of view, but you know, drum and bass has always been an influence for me, and some of the sounds that they pull off there that subtly influences and re it feeds back into hip hop and feeds back into contemporary music, I find really interesting.
Right, right. Definitely. Yeah, the rhythms that, that drum and bass has is crazy, man. Technical and just so polyrhythmic, you know. Crazy. From,
yeah, I would imagine as a selector and as a producer, that must have, that genres and influencing your sound, that must be a constant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I think Craze pulled off like the unthinkable, when all of a sudden he was able to transfer his DJ skills into drum and bass. That was a real moment as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, man, I thought that was dope, because I think, you know, he was always into that music, but he's able to merge the technical skills of battling, you know what I mean, stuff that he's done, and put it into his DJ sets, you know what I mean, and not disrupt the dance floor at the same time. That's such a skill set to learn. I think a lot of turntablists have a hard time, you know, going from the stage of battling and then going into a club's scenario and DJing and forgetting that, you know, people are either dancing or bobbing their heads, and you don't want to disrupt that, you know what I mean, with your DJ set.
Mm-hmm. That's effortless, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess from a school's point of view, this is something of a constant as well, just forever reiterating that style is your own, be patient, take risks, transfer skills across production and DJing, and just look deep enough into yourself to find who you are in the tapestry.
Right, 100%. You know, the journey is never ending, and I think you're always trying to find yourself, you know, and as we mature, our tastes change, you know what I mean? And you got to kind of take what you like and make it your own, you know what I mean? Constantly, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Was there ever a moment where you thought to yourself, oh man, I'm not sure if this is work. Something ain't connecting anymore. Did you ever have those doubts?
Ooh. I did, actually. So it was after I put out Phantasmagoria. This is around 2003, 2004. You know, like I just got married, had my first daughter, and it was during, so yeah, this is around 2005, I would say. I was putting out a lot of break records, scratch records, battle records. Mm-hmm. And that era, it started to slow down. And that's when Serato kind of came in, and yeah, people were buying less vinyl. And so it was harder for me to make a living and pay bills by just putting out product. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I was like, all right, I need to make a decision. What do I do here? How do I pay my bills? Mm-hmm. Do I go back to school, or do I, you know, get a full-time 9-to-5 job? So it was that around that time is when I found things to be difficult in surviving off just my music full time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was lucky enough that I had a good friend from Japan. He ended up moving to LA, and we started a business together where we were doing distribution of records and just focusing on DJ accessories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I still had my hand in DJing, but I didn't have to survive off of that full time. I had a side business where I could actually make some money still in DJing, but off of DJ accessories.
Man, that is super smart. And I think all of us have anyone that's worth their salt in the culture, you just find a way, don't you?
Yeah. You have to. It's either that or you crumble up and stop. You know what I mean? And I didn't want to stop because this is all I know.
And that shit scares me, man. Can you imagine no D styles? Can you imagine what it'd be like if we did not do those maneuvers to allow for us to even be sitting here now? That scares me, man.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I didn't want it to be where I had to put out some bullshit music just to make money. You know what I mean? I truly believe I want to put out something when I have something to say and it's worth someone's time to listen to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So what's the future? What's the future, Superstar? What's the future for D-Stars?
So I have another turntable band group. It's called 545. It's myself, Private Peep Show, Mike Boo, and DJ XS. So there's four of us. We basically do turntable music. We're still trying to carry the torch in that art. And we put out music. So we just recorded in Hawaii a couple months ago. We recorded some new music. So hopefully that's out soon. And I got back into producing, making beats, and working with MCs again. I stopped for a long time. In the late 90s, I was in a group called Third Sight, and I was doing all the beats and the scratches. And then I stopped when I got more into, just turntablism. Mm-hmm. But I kind of fell in love with it again, and just the whole Renaissance era of hip hop and indie hip hop. Mm-hmm. So I got another record coming out soon, next month, with an MC, Noah the Flood. And we got an album coming out. So I'm excited for that as well.
Wow. That's awesome. I love that. 505, huh?
Yeah. So 545.
545, that's it.
That's five songs by four turntablists in 5 days. Basically, we gave ourselves this sort of this goal, you know what I mean? So that's where the name comes from.
Yo, that is the sickest idea. That is so sick. What a concept. What a concept project. I love that.
Yeah, thank you, man. You know, because we just don't want to overthink things and be so, like, such a perfectionist. You know, like, sometimes you can capture something in 5 minutes, and that's it right there. You know what I mean? You don't have to dress it up and spray cologne on it and paint it, you know, with this gloss. It, like, keep it raw, and as long as that energy and that feel is there, then that's it. Put it
out. I'd argue 545 is a brand as much as Versus is, bro. That
oh shit.
That concept is crazy.
I never thought about that. That's dope, though. Yeah,
you could have, like, beatbox 545s. You could have producer 545. Dude, this... copyright D-Styles 2022.
I love it, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the lick. Wow.
Never thought about that, yeah. Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, man. Hey, have that one on me, man. Success is... You know, that's... You're building and you're creating, brother. More power to you.
Thank you, man. I'm trying.
Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, Mr. 545, Visible Scratch Pickles, Beat Junkies, the awesome D-Styles inside the place.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, my brother.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate you having me, man. It's an honor, big time.
Oh, brother. Honestly, the pleasure is all mine and ours and the rest of the crew over here. We value you entirely and looking forward to getting you over these shores eventually. Or at least me coming over there and we can buck and have a cup of tea.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, seriously, if you ever in Las Vegas, let me know, man.
Oh, 100%. I'll be in the what's it called? I don't remember. Mandalay Bay. I'll be there in the
Oh shit. Yeah, Mandalay Bay. Sounds like a good time to me, though. Shit.
Yeah, man. Vegas is everything, man. I love it. I'll happily be over ASAP, my brother.
Let me know anytime, bro. Seriously.
My guy. Ladies and gentlemen, D-Styles in the house, Killer Keller Podcast, out like it was out of fashion. You know what to do. Sharing is caring. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Cheers, D.
Thank you, Killer. Appreciate you, man.
Take care, brother. Peace.